to us. Good morning. We left off Yud Zayin Amud Beis, the Mishnah, the new parak. Someone who's dead is laying before them as exempt from Shema. And not only is one exempt from Kriyat Shema, but one is exempt from Shemona Esrei, Tefillin, and all mitzvahs that are said in the Torah. Rashi points out, Levishu Torah b'machsheves kvuraso, v'hu dumya d'chasan d'patr mishum tirda d'mitzvah. So Rashi compares it to the chasan. The same way that we said the chasan gets married, he's exempt because of the preoccupation with the bias mitzvah, so too the person is preoccupied here with the thoughts or the plans of burying the dead. No se amito v'chilufein. Those who carry the funeral bier, those who carry the actual body, they would carry the actual bed. So, and those who will take over, eshelif me'amito, those who are in front of the bier, which means, again, remember the way they used to do it, truly still happens in Eretz Yisrael now. When you look at large levayas, there are a lot of people, so you don't have the same people carrying the mace the entire way, but they hand it off. So those who are in front of the funeral bier, meaning those who are still going to receive the body, as well as those who are behind. Those who are in front of the funeral bier, meaning who are going to be handed the body, they are pater from Shema and everything else. The eshla achra mita, those who are behind the funeral bier, tzorech b'en chayav, and those who are still needed are chayav. And everybody is exempt from tefila. Meaning, again, remember, the only time that we have some obligated, some not obligated, is by Kriyat Shema, which is the Oraisa. But by tefila, Shemona Esrei, which is the Rabbanan, everybody's exempt. Kavru es hameis, if they buried the dead, or when they buried the dead. The chazru, and now they return. So now, let's say you had these individuals who were carrying the funeral bier, who until now were exempt from Shema. So now, what was interesting is the following. They would go ahead and, you know, we have this practice also of the Shura. But the Shura is a little bit different. The way our Shura works is that after the burial, everyone lines up and the mourners walk through. In the times of the Mishnah, apparently the way it worked is the mourners would remain stationary and all of the comforters would go... Comforters would file past the mourners. So now the Mishnah says like this. If they finish the burial, and now again, the people who participate in the burial are now making their way back to the mourners to form the Shura, to give them consolation. So if they could begin and ultimately finish Shema, before they get back to the line, before they get back to the Shura, before they come in contact with the mourner, then they should begin. If not, they shouldn't. The idea is that the same way, when they are preoccupied with the burial, that's an exemption from the mitzvah of Shema because their mind is on the burial. So comforting the mourners immediately after the burial is still considered part and parcel of the burial itself. Ha'omdim b'shura, those who are standing in the Shura, ha'pinimim p'turim, those who are standing on the inner part of the Shura are puter from Shema, v'achitzonim chayovim. But those on the outside are exempt. So the idea is, especially larger levayas, when you had this Shura was multiple people thick. So if you were standing on the inside of the Shura, which means then you would have direct contact with the mourner, then you were exempt from Shema, because you had to go ahead and focus yourself on actually giving consolation, versus if you were a couple of people back, where even though your presence was necessary, but truth be told, you weren't necessarily going to be talking to the mourner, therefore you would be chayiv in Shema. Now, also, the point that comes out of this particular Mishnah is that halacha l'maisa, this first phrase is very important, mishameis amutu l'fanav. This idea is that when you are occupied with taking care of the needs of the deceased, specifically over here, the burial of the deceased, you are exempt from Shema, which is d'oraisa, and of course, if you're exempt from Shema, you're exempt from all of the mitzvahs as well. Says the Gemara, muta l'fanav in, she'ena muta l'fanav lo. So the inference from the Mishnah is that the only time you have this exemption is when the dead is literally right in front of you. The mace is literally right in front of you. But if the mace is not in front of you, then you would not be exempt, i.e. you would be chayiv. Or mini, misha mace muta l'fanav, ocha b'bayi sacher. So now Gemara quotes a b'reisa. That says, if somebody had a dead person, misha meso. Now meso is possessive, so usually it refers to one's own relative. So one's own relative died, and the mace is right there in front of me. So the halacha is oseb ocha b'bayis acher. You should eat in a different house. meaning you should not eat in front of the mace. If you don't have another house, you eat in your friend's house, meaning if you don't, if the idea is that if you own another residence, you should go to that other residence to eat. What happens if you don't own another residence? Okay, go to your friend's house. Either one of two things. Either you don't have a friend, or you do have a friend, but your friend doesn't have a house. Then you create a partition in front of the mace, and then you eat. What if you don't have material from which to fashion a partition? You simply turn your back to the mace, and you eat. But you don't recline. You don't eat meat and you don't drink wine, which is one of the dinim, one of the laws of aninus. You don't make a bracha. You would not create a zimon. And again, if others, let's say there happen to be two other people there that were also eating, let's say who were not necessarily avelim, they would not be permitted to include you in their zimon. And you are exempt from Shema, Shmona Esrei, Tefillin, all other mitzvos. However, ubishavis mesav va'ochel basar v'yayin b'shosi yayin. But on Shabbos, if all this is happening on Shabbos, so you could eat meat, you could drink wine, you could recline. Umevarich, you make a bracha before you eat. Umezamin, and you could be included in a zimun. Umevarich and alav, and others can include you in a zimun. Umezamin alav v'chayiv b'chol hamitzvos ha'amuros b'torah. So what the Gemara is pointing out over here is there is no aninos on Shabbos. No aninos on Shabbos. The idea is, the concept of aninos, the concept of the p'tur of all of these mitzvahs is this idea of osik b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. If you are actively engaged in the mitzvah specifically of caring for the dead, that exempts you from all other mitzvahs. The assumption is on Shabbos, you can't really be too involved in the needs for the dead because it's Shabbos. Therefore, halacha l'maaseh chayvin all of the mitzvahs. But I will say, what's... Now, we'll just finish this braisa. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, Mitoch shenischayiv be'elu, nischayiv be'kulim. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, well, if it's Shabbos already, since you're obligating all of these other things, i.e., since on Shabbos you'll be chayiv in Shema, you'll be chayiv in Tefillah, you'll be chayiv in all, so therefore, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, you're chayiv in all other mitzvahs. So here's what's interesting. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel comes along and adds on to the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama says that if this is Shabbos, then Aloch Lamais Yuchayiv and Shema, Tefillah, and all other mitzvahs. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, oh, and if you're Chayiv in these, you're Chayiv Bikulan. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel seems to be adding something on to the Tanakhama. What is he adding on? Rabbi Yochanan, my benayu. Tashmish hamita ika benayu. The difference is marital relations. So Rabbi said, we know that halacha lamaisa, when a man's wife goes to the mikvah, there is a special din of ona. There is a special din of being with one's wife. So the shayla is now, what happens if she went to the mikvah on Shabbos? So now the question is the husband obligated to engage in marital relations? The Tanakhama would say no. Tanakhama would say no, that even though there's no aninos on Shabbos, nevertheless, what we call the Dvarim Shebetzina, certain private displays are still prohibited, and therefore Tashmish Hamita would be usur. When Rabbi Yochan, when Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, Mitochshin eschayiv be'elu neschayiv be'kulan, what does kulan come to include? Even Tashmish Hamita. So the Gemara says the following. Katani mihas, patr mi kriyashma, uminat tfila, uminat tfilim, umikomitzos ha'amuras patora. So why do we bring that this whole braisa? Because the inference that the Gemara made from the Mishnah was, when are you exempt from kriyashma and all these other mitzvos? When it's mi shemeso mutal lefanov. Only when you are in the direct presence of the mace. What do we see from this braisa? That's not the case. Because remember, what did the braisa tell you to do? The braisa said, if possible, go somewhere else. And we see that even if you're somewhere else, you're still potter from Shema, Shmona Esrei, Tefillin. So we see that even if you're not in the presence of the dead, as long as you are the person responsible for the dead, you are potter. So the Gemara says, Amarat Papa, Tirgama Amachzir Panava Ochel. So Rav Papa says, well, you could explain that the Bryce is talking about which case where you turned your head and you're eating. Meaning maybe the Bryce is referring to the last case where I don't have another house, my friend doesn't have another house, I don't even have material from which to fashion a mechitza. So what am I doing? I'm sitting in the same house as the dead, maybe even the same room as the dead, with my back to the dead. And that's when the Bryce tells me I'm parted from everything. So the Gemara says, no. Rav Ashi Amar, Kevan Shemutal Alav Lakovro, Kimutal Afanav Dami. So Rav Ashi states the conclusion, which is halacha lemaisa, that once the obligation of burial is upon you, it is as if the dead is resting in front of you. So meaning you don't actually need geographic proximity to have halachic proximity. Halachic proximity says if you are responsible for the mace, then it's misha meso muta lefanov, which then means you are exempt from all mitzvos asay. So the Gemara says, where do we know this from? Shene'emar vayakam Avraham me'al p'nei meso. So the Torah says in Chayisar that Avraham Avinu got up from in front of his dead, a reference to Sari Imenu, v'ne'emar, and the Pasuk says just a couple of weeks later when he talks to B'nei Ches, in order to go ahead and secure a burial plot for Sarah, it says, v'ekbera mesi milafanai, I will bury my dead from in front of me. What do we see from there? That even though Avraham Avinu was no longer with the body of Sari Imenu, he still called himself what? Milfanai, or he still called her in front of me. Therefore, Rav Ashi, based on this, we see this concept that as long as the responsibility to bury the dead is upon you, that is as if the dead is in front of you. The concept of having the dead, the reality of the dead in front of you, creates an exemption from all positive mitzvos, because again, since you are responsible for taking care of the needs, that's a, of the dead, that's a mitzvah. O seif a mitzvah, pater min a mitzvah. Calls my...
slightly different. The first case was the one dead person was here, we all are part of the mitzvah. This sounds like
no, that's not true. No. That's what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying the person who's responsible is exempted. It's not changing, it's refining it. The Mishnah begins with a very open-ended statement. The Gemara is just clarified. So the Gemara hasn't changed its position, the Gemara just clarified its position. So the Gemara says, "Kol zman shemuta alav lekovro, kimuta lefanav dami." So the Gemara says, bottom line conclusion is, any time the responsibility of burial is upon you, then halacha lemaisa kimuta lefanav dami. That is as if the dead is resting right in front of you. So the Gemara says, and now David, this is really your point. Meso in avam mishamro lo. Now here's what's interesting: is the lashon of misha meso muta lefanav is possessive, right? My dead. So it makes it sound like the only time there is an exemption is when I am responsible for that, which would normally mean it's my relative. However, about Mishamro, but let's say I'm watching a mace, right? I'm a shomer. I'm watching the body, but the mace is not related to me at all. So what's that locha? So the inference from here would be, mace so in about Mishamro lo, that the only time you're exempt is when you're watching your mace, but if I'm just a shomer, then I'm not exempt. So Marcel, one second. That Tanya, but we learned elsewhere. We learned in a Braisa, Hamishamra has a mace, Afapisha. So we learned elsewhere that if you are watching over the mace, even though it's not your mace, you are potter from Shema, Shmona Esrei, Tefillin, or Mitzvos Ha'amuros Batorah. Apa pi she'eino meso. So the Gemara says, you're right. Meso, apa pi she'eino meshamro. Meso umishamro. I'm sorry. Meso apisha eno mishamro. I'm sorry. Let me read. Go back one second. Mishamro afa pisha eno meso. Meso afa pisha eno mishamro. So the Gemara says, you're right. There are two levels of exemption. Exemption number one is if you are the one who is the shomer over the body, even though what? It's not your mace. You are osek b'mitzvah. You are involved in the mitzvah of watching over the dead, and therefore you're exempt from all positive mitzvahs. But meso, if it's your dead, even if what? You are not the one who's being the shomer, halacha lemaisa, you are exempt. So the Gemara says, because you're also in both of those levels, you are osek b'mitzvah, patra min ha-mitzvah. Meso umeshamro in. So this seems to give us the inference that the only time you're exempt is in one of two cases. Either if it's your dead, meaning if it's your relative, then by definition you're in a state of aninos, even if you're not in front of the dead, or if you're actively watching the mace, even if it's not your relative, you're osik b'mitzvah. But if you're just stam walking in a cemetery, you will not be exempt. So the Gemara says, one second, v'hatanya. Yo lo yahalich adam aveisak kvaros, a person should not walk in a cemetery with tefillin berosho, with tefillin on his head, v'sefer Torah bizro, or holding a sefer Torah, v'korei, and learning from it, v'im asa kein, and if you did this, over mishum loig larash cheref osehu. You are in violation of what the Gemara comes to call loig larash, which is a pasuk from Mishlei. Loig larash literally means someone who makes fun of the pauper, ultimately blasphemes his creator. This idea was the same way you wouldn't go over to a pauper and make fun of them that they don't have money. So the Gemara uses this concept to go ahead and highlight the idea that you don't go ahead and perform mitzvos in the presence of the dead, because it is if you are poking making fun at them, that they can no longer go ahead and do this. So the Gemara says, so therefore you see from here, that's what? That the exemption from mitzvos is not just by meso, and it's not just by mishamro, but it's even by what? Holich b'veis akvaros. The Gemara says, not so fast. Hasam toch arba amos hu da'azer, chutz la'arba amos chayiv. That's only true when you are within 4 amos, 6 feet of a grave. Then if you're within 6 feet of a grave, you can't do mitzvos. But if you're outside of 6 feet of the grave, you can do mitzvos. Do amar mar, meis topes dalet amos l'kriyashma, ha chutz l'dalet amos nami potter. So the Gemara says that Mar says that if you're within 4 amos of a grave, you wouldn't say Shema. So too, it's not just for Shema, it's with all mitzvos. When it comes to all mitzvos, halacha l'maaseh, if you are within dalet amos of a grave, you would not go ahead and perform any of these mitzvahs because of Lo'egil Ashra. We'll say bottom line. Well, actually, we're not at the bottom line yet. Gufa, Hamashamer Es Hameis, one who goes ahead and watches over the dead, Af Apisha Eino Meso, even though it's not his dead, Patra Mikriyash Shema Minat Tefillah Mikomitzas Hamuras Patora. So Rabbi say, if you are acting as a shomer, well, now we'll discuss why there's a need for Shmira, but if you are acting as the shomer, then Halacha L'Maisa, you are exempt from all mitzvot. You are exempt from all mitzvot. Now listen to this. Hayushnayim, let's say there were two people doing shmira. Zeh mishamer, v'zeh korei. Zeh mishamer, v'zeh korei. So what do? They alternate. So while one is in active shmira, so one reads Shema, while the other one is doing shmira, the other one does Shema, so they alternate. Ben azay omer, hayubam besvina. Shema. Ben Azai says, Hayu ba'im b'sfina. If they were traveling on a boat, Manicho b'zavis zu, umispalulin shnehem b'zavis acheres. But interestingly enough, Ben Azai says that if they were traveling on a boat, then even if there are two of them, they could put the corpse in one corner and they could daven in another corner. The idea being is they can't daven directly next to the corpse, because that what we said before, that's loig l'rash. But interestingly enough, as opposed to regular cases where they have to switch off, one does shmira, one davens, if they're on the boat, they could both daven simultaneously and put the corpse in a corner. So what's in my benayu? So what's the difference over here? Amravina choshishin la'achborim ika benayu. Mar sabar chashinan, umar sabar lo chashinan. So we'll say the interesting part is, why do we have a concept of shmira? So when we think about shmira, the truth is we think about it more on esoteric levels. That the Zohar tells us that the soul is with the body until the time that of the kvura, we don't want to leave the soul alone. All of that is true, but there was a much more practical reason that motivated the concept of shmira, which was to guard the body from mice, right? To guard the body from ultimately from being attacked by vermin. That was the idea. So the Gemara says, the machlokis of Igir is, you have to be choshesh for mice on boats. So the first opinion, Tanakama said, no, you know, so Tanakama said, yes, you have to worry about mice even on boats, and therefore, if you have two, there's the same system on land and on sea. One does shmira, one davins, and then they switch off. As opposed to Ben Azai, who says, no, on the boat, you don't have to worry about mice, and therefore, what? You could put the body in one corner. You can't daven within dalet amos of the body, but they could both put the body in one corner, and they could both daven at the same time. So both say, bottom line, halacha l'maisa. So whether it's meso, if a person is chas v'shalom in aninos, a person loses one of the relatives whom they're obligated to sit shiva, so then halacha l'maisa, they are exempt from all positive mitzvos. There's an interesting discussion halacha as to whether or not it's a forced exemption or a voluntary exemption. Meaning, let's say I'm the onen, but I want to put on tefillin. I want to daven shema. So according to most opinions, it is a forced exemption. You are not permitted to do mitzvos asay even if you want, because Chazal wanted your mind and wanted your energies to be directed on taking care of all of the needs of the deceased. If you are a shomer, watching the body, even if you are not related to the deceased, halacha l'maisa, why you are engaged in active shmira, you are exempt from all positive mitzvos. And third piece of halacha l'maisa, when in close proximity to a grave, i.e. dalet amos, if one normally wears their tzitzis out, one's tzitzis are just out, one must make sure to go ahead and tuck them in. Tefillin, although this is not really so matzui today, tefillin, if it's your shal yad, it's not such a big deal because you would cover it up, but one would also have to cover up their shal rosh in close proximity to a grave. Tanu rabbanan, hamolich chatzon samakom l'makom. If one is transporting bones, bones from one place to another. Now, okay, this could be for let's say a situation, we spoke about this earlier, concept of reburial, right? They would go ahead and put the bodies in a burial cave, and then after the bodies decomposed, they would collect the bones and put that in a family plot. So if you're going ahead and you're taking bones from one place to another, you shouldn't put the bones in a sack and slide it over the donkey, and right on top of them, because ultimately it's not respectful to the remains of the deceased. But if you were concerned because of Goyim, who may go ahead and for whatever reason take the bones or do something else, or because of robbers, mutter, then you are permitted to go ahead and put the bones in a sack and put the sack over the donkey so it doesn't attract any attention. And the same way that they said this about bones, they said about Sefer Torah. So the Gemara says, Ahia, what is that referring to? What did they say about Sefer Torah? If you say it's referring to the first statement, that you're not permitted to put a Sefer Torah in a sack and just sling it over a donkey, pshita, that's obvious. Migara Sefer Torah me'atzamos, is a Sefer Torah any less holy than human remains? Ela asefa. Rather, it's referring to the second statement, which is what? That if you are fearful because of nachrim or listin, then what? You are permitted to, so to speak, camouflage the Torah by putting it in a sack and throwing it over the donkey. Meaning, if the way to keep the Torah safe is to engage in what would otherwise look like a little bit less respect for the Torah, you're permitted to do that. Amar Rachva, Amar Rav Yehuda. Kolaroa ha-meisveh, ha-meisveh enum elav, over mishum loig l'rash. Anyone who sees a dead person being taken out for burial and does not escort him violates this loig l'rash cheref aseyu. V'imhilveyu mascharo, and if you escort the dead, what is your reward? Amar Rav Asi, alav ha-kasuf over, Malva Hashem chonin dal umechabdo chonin evyon. So literally it means one who it is like you're lending Hashem when you take compassion on the poor, and ultimately one who goes ahead and honors God, one honors God through having compassion on the pauper. But the Gemara is making a little bit of a play on words over here. It's Milava Hashem, that ultimately one who escorts the dead is as if he's escorting God himself. Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yonasan were walking in the cemetery. Rabbi Yonasan's tchelas, which means his tzitzis, was dragging against the ground. Amar le Rabbi Chiya, dalye. Rabbi Chiya said, quick, pick it up. In order that the dead will not say, chutzpah, tomorrow they're going to join us, but today they disgrace us. This idea of flaunting the fact that I could still do a mitzvah while the dead cannot. Amar le. So Rabbi Yonasan said to Rabbi Chiya, Umi yadi kulehai, do the dead really know what's happening? V'haksiv, v'hamesim enam yodim u'uma. But the pasuk says, the dead don't know anything. Amar le, he said to him, Im karisa lo shanisa, v'im shanisa lo shilashta, im shilashta lo pirshulacha. If you learn this once, you did not review it. If you reviewed it, you did not learn it a third time. And if you learned it a third time, you really didn't understand it. So he's saying, essentially, you really misunderstood this pasuk. Why? What does the pasuk say? Ki achayim yodim shemusu. Now he launches into a little bit of a lengthy drasha. Ki achayim yodim shemusu. The living know that they will die. Elu tzadikim. This refers to the righteous. Shebemisasan nikru chayim. Who even in their death are called living. So we'll say, so just from this one pasuk, the drasha on this is ki achayim yodim sheyamusu, which he's dashing to say like this: the chayim, who are the tzadikim, who are even called living in their death, or even called living once they die, yodim sheyamusu, even know what is happening when what? When they are already dead. He's bringing this as a riot to the fact that the dead do have an awareness, even once they have died. So now he gets into a drasha. Shenemar, ubenayo ben Yehoyada ben Ishchai. Benayo ben Yehoyada, right, was the son of a living man. Rav Paulim, he did many things. Mikabtzael, from Kabtzael. Huhika eshnei Ariel Moav, he killed, right, he smote the two Ariel, the two leaders of Moav. Vuhu yorad vihika eshari besoach habar b'yom ha-shaleg. And he came down and killed the lion in the pit on the snowy day. All right, what does all of this mean? Ben Ishchai, what does it mean that Yehoyada was a Ben Ishchai? So the Gemara says, Atu kule alma b'nei meisininu. What does that mean? That everybody else is the son of dead people? Ela ben Ishchai sha'afilu b'misaso karu Ishchai. Rather, he's called the son of the living. Because what does that mean? His father, even when his father was dead, was called alive. Meaning Yehoyada. Yehoyada, his father Benayo was the son of Yehoyada. His father Yehoyada was such a great tzaddik that even when Yehoyada was dead, Yehoyada was considered to be alive. Rav Paulim Mikabtzael, what does that mean? Shariba v'kibetz Paulim l'Torah, that he made it his point to go ahead and acquire, gather workers for Torah, meaning he enlisted many people in the study of Torah. V'hu hika.
It's Riva in this case. The word Riva. Shariba.
Riba, like Riba, he a lot of numbers. V'uhika eshnei Ariel Moab, and he killed the two leaders of Moab. Shelo hiniach kamos lo b'mikdash rishon v'lo b'mikdash sheni. He did not leave anyone like him during the first temple or second temple era. V'hu yarad v'hika eshari b'soch habar b'yom ha-sheleg. He came down and he killed the lion in the pit on the snowy day. Ika da amri, so what does that mean? Ika da amri, de tavar gizize de barda v'nachas v'taval. So some say what it refers to is that he broke through sheets of ice and went into the water of the well for a mikvah. For a mikvah, okay. Ika da amri, de tana sifra de beirab b'yom ha-desifso. Others say what it means is he learned the entire sifra of the yeshiva of Rav on a winter day. The idea being the winter days are shorter. So he went ahead and he broke through the ice and he learned a voluminous amount even on a very short day. That, and I will say, the only reason the Gemara brought that entire drasha, that we're not really learning about Ben Yehoyada right now, or Yehoyada Ben Yehoyada. What we're learning about is the fact that Yehoyada Ben Ayahu was called the Ben Ishchai, was called the son of the living man. So this is all a build up to this idea that the righteous are called living even when they're dead. Now, I've also said, under normal circumstances, the way we understand that particular drasha is that the righteous are considered living even when they're dead, means that their legacy lives on. What they represented lives on. What the Gemara is going to try to show right now is that it's more than just legacy. It's that the dead have an awareness of what is going on in this world, even once they are no longer here. So the Gemara says, V'hameisim einam yodim mu'uma. What does it mean the dead don't know anything? Elu rishoyim. That refers to the wicked. Shebechayim kiruyim meisim. That even when they are alive, are called dead. Shneemar. V'ata cholol rosha nisi Yisrael. So both said, the Gemara is dashing that over there. V'hameisim. Who are the dead? The dead are the wicked. When are they called dead? Even when they are alive. So the wicked, who are like they are dead, even when they are alive, lo yodim mu'uma, don't know anything. Or the other possibilities from here, apish nayim edim or apish losha edim, yumas hames. What does the pasuk say? Through the testimony of two witnesses or three witnesses, yumas hames means what? Rabosai, the dead will die. What does that mean? The dead will die. So you see clearly that the wicked are already considered to be dead while they're still living in this world. Chayhu, he's still technically alive. Ela hames mi kara. Right, but nevertheless, he's considered to be dead in this world because of his wickedness. I will say, we get into something very interesting now. Bnei Rabbi Chiya, nafak l'kreyasa. So the sons of Rabbi Chiya went out to the city to take care of their holdings. Rashi says, l'isasek ba'avodas achuzasam. So the sons of Rabbi Chiya apparently left yeshiva to go out and to run the family business. What happened? Iyakar lehu tamudaihu. They forgot all of their learning. You see what happens when you don't show up for shir? This is a commercial. Right? You better show up, because if you don't show up, you forget all of your learning. They forgot all their learning. They were very pained, and they tried to remember what they learned. So one brother said to the other, do you think father, Rabbi Chiya, who was dead by now, do you think father knows about our pain? Meaning, do you think father is aware about the fact that we're pained, that we lost our learning? Amar le'idach mina yada. So the other brother responded, how would father know? V'haksu, v'haksiv, yechabdu banav, v'lo yeda. V'lo yada. You see, so the pasuk says in Eov that they will honor his sons, and v'lo yeda, and he will not know. So Eov says that that's a reference to the fact that the dead don't know what is happening in this world. Amar le'idach, v'lo yada, is that true? V'haksiv, ach bisaro, alov yichav, v'nefesh alov tovel. But yet the pasuk says, again, this pasuk also from Eov, that his flesh will pain him, and his soul will mourn. But Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, what does that mean? Kasha rima lemes, that the worms are as painful to the dead, Kimechet b'basar hachai, like a needle in the flesh of the living, which at least tells us on some level that the dead are at least aware of the pain of the decomposition of the body. Now what that means, it can't mean literal pain, because obviously the neshama doesn't feel physical pain, but the point the Gemara is trying to make is, there is definitely, the dead definitely have an awareness as to what's happening in this world. Omri, so he responded, but maybe b'tzara di do yadi, b'tzara da achrina lo yadi. Then maybe the awareness of the dead is limited to what? His own pain, so to speak. He knows about what's happening to his own body, but he doesn't necessarily know what's happening to those around him. Vatanya. So listen to this. This is an amazing message, we'll say. Vatanya. Vatanya. Ma'aseh v'chassid echad shenas andino la'ani b'arev Rosh Hashanah. There was the episode of a particular chassid, a very pious man, who gave tzedakah, gave a dinar to an ani on Erev Rosh Hashanah, v'shani b'tzuras, in the middle of a famine. V'hiknitaso ishto. And his wife got angry at him. Now, why did his wife get angry at him, Rav Osai? So generally, you know, at least in Talmudic, so if the guy's a chassid, presumably what else is he? Poor, right? Generally the way it went together, at least we live in different times, Baruch Hashem, but, you know, in the Gemara's time, the chassid was poor. So now, he's a poor man in the midst of a famine, and what is he doing? He's giving tzedakah. Now, a dinar also is not an insignificant amount of money. So he's giving a dinar. So his wife gets very angry at him, not because she's not a Baal HaShchesed, but because as wives are, they're usually a little bit more practical than their husbands. So she says, you know, what are you doing? V'knitaso ishto v'halach v'lan b'vei sakbaras. So there was such a big fight, that's what? That he didn't sleep at home that night. And he went to sleep, forget about the couch, he went to sleep in the cemetery. V'shama shtei ruchos shemesapros zulazu. And he overheard a conversation between two spirits. Amra chad lechaverto. One spirit said to her friend, Chavirasi, my friend, boi v'noshut ba'olam. So we'll say, you have to understand. So this chassid who's sleeping in the cemetery is hearing this entire conversation. So one spirit says to her friend, two female spirits, come my friend, let's go, fly in the celestials, in the upper heavens, and let's hear from behind the pargot. Pargot literally means curtain. So behind the curtain represents the throne room of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let's go ahead and listen from behind the curtain what's going to happen in the world this year. Maparos literally means what bad things are going to happen in the world this year. But, right, so Amrala, Chavirasa, Eini Yechola, I can't come with you. Sha'ani Kavura b'machatzeles shal kamim. Because I am buried in a mat of reeds. And I will say, what does this mean? So here's something amazing. If you know, we go ahead and we bury in a way that allows the body to decompose as quickly as possible. That's why we don't use metal coffins. That's why we don't embalm bodies. That's why, if possible, we try to never use vaults. And that's why, again, halacha l'maaseh in Eretz Yisrael, kavura takes place directly in the earth. Why? We want the body to decompose as quickly as possible. Because there is this idea that the soul is tethered to the body as long as the body is in physical existence. The faster the body decomposes, the sooner the soul is untethered and the soul is able to fly free into Shamayim. So this girl was buried in a mat of reeds. Reeds, apparently a mat of reeds, decompose very slowly. So this girl is saying, I can't come with you because my soul is tethered to this body. Elilatiyat, you go. Umasha at Shomat, Amrili. And whatever you hear, come and tell me. So the girl who was able to go goes, and she went up to Shemayim. What did you hear? She said, I heard from behind the curtain that whoever plants after the first, whoever seeds after the first rain, that there's going to be a massive hail, and the hail is going to destroy all the crops. Okay? Halachu, so who's hearing all of this? This is like, you know, this is like celestial insider trading. You know, so now he just heard this. Halachu b'zara b'rabi yishniyah. So what happened? So this chassid is no fool. So he just got insider information from me'achori ha'pargod. So he doesn't plant after the first rains, he plants after the second rains. Kala olam kulo laka, shalo lo laka. Everybody's crop was wiped out, his was not. not a pauper anymore. So apparently year number two, even though he did not get into a fight with his wife, apparently he still thought it was financially advantageous to go back and sleep in the cemetery. So he goes back to the cemetery, and what happens? He heard the same two spirits conversing. So again, they have the same conversation. One soul says to his friend, let's go up and let's hear what Hashem is going to say. The other one says, I already told you, I can't go. So this is still a year later, and her body is still not decomposed. I can't go with you. But you go, but whatever you hear, come and tell me. So the other girl's spirit goes up, flies around, comes back and tells her, what did you hear? So the girl's soul who was able to go up says, Shamati shakol hazare berevi yishnia, shidofon malaka oso. I heard that whoever plants after the second rain, a massive windstorm will come and wipe out all of the crops. Halach v'zara b'revir rishona. So this year the chassid planted when? The chassid planted, even, listen, chassidim can also be entrepreneurial. They're not mutually exclusive. So the chassid went ahead and plants after the first rain this year. What happened? Shekola olam kulam nishtav. Everybody's crop was wiped out. V'shelo lo nishtav. And his crop was not wiped out. So now, here's what's interesting. Amra lo ishto. Mipnei ishtakit shalkala olam kula laka v'shalkala laka v'achashav shalkala olam kula nishtav v'shalkala lo nishtav. So here's what's interesting. So now his wife, who's never apparently known her husband to be such a great businessman, wonders how exactly did this happen, right? 2 years in a row now you've had a windfall, right? Everybody else's crop gets wiped out 2 years in a row and you're okay. So what happened? Sachla kala dvarim halalu. Big mistake. He told her, right? Just buy her a nice present. He told her everything that happened.
Yeah, delete that.
Right? We'll go back and edit this. Amru, they said, Lo hayu yamim mo'atim ad shenafla kitata bein ishto shel osa chasid u bein ima shel osa riba. So he told her what happened, and the Gemara says it was only a few days later that what happened? A fight breaks out between the wife of the chasid and the mother of the girl, the mother of the deceased girl, who was buried in the mat of reeds. And what happens? Amra la, the wife of the chassid gets so angry at this other woman that she says, listen, big shot, l'chi ve'er eich biteich, shikavur b'machatzeles shalkanim. What a chutzpah you have to open your mouth. Let's go look at the grave of your daughter, who is buried in a mat of reeds. V'shana ha'acheres, Halach v'lam b'beis ha'kavaros. Year number three, the chassid, right? Some people go to Uman for Rosh Hashanah. See, he's going to the cemetery. Right? So he goes and he sleeps in the cemetery. And what happened? B'shama osan rucho shemesapra zuim zu. And he hears the spirits once again conversing. And they say to each other, Amr lach chavirasi boi v'nashot ba'olam v'nishma le'achori ha'pargod ma'poronos ba'li'olam. So, again, one spirit comes to the other. Come, let's go fly up to the heavens and let's hear what's going to happen in the world. So listen to this. Amra la, so this was the girl who was buried in the mat of reeds, says, Chavirasi, hanicheni, leave me alone. Dvarim shebeini lebeinach kvar nishu b'nachayim. Our words are clearly being heard by the living. So what, interestingly enough, what must have happened is, what the Gemara is using this story to say is, clearly once the wife of the chassid and the mother of the girl got into a fight, and this whole blow-up happened, and the wife of the chassid said this terribly mean thing to the mother of the girl, let's go see your daughter's grave who's buried in the reeds. So apparently this got back to the spirit. So the Gemara says, Alma Yodi. From here we see that what? That the dead absolutely have an awareness of what's going on in this world. So the Gemara says, well, not necessarily. Dilma inish achrina shachiv va'azu va'amrlu. So the Gemara says, well, maybe not. Maybe what? Maybe someone else died and told this girl's spirit about what had happened in the world of the living. Maybe someone else who saw this heated exchange between the wife of the chassid and between the mother of the girl saw this, died, and came and told the spirit. But the girl, the spirit herself, did not necessarily know. Okay. So the Gemara says the following. Tashma, Ziiri haba mafkit zuze gabe ushbezichta. Okay, we'll do one more line. I will say, Ziiri deposited some money with a particular woman. Ad daasi va'azil lebeirav shchiva. So apparently, he deposited this money with this woman, young girl actually, we'll see, and he went off to yeshiva, and by the time he came back, she died. She died, Ozel Basra L'Chatzer Mabes. He went to the cemetery. Amar la, Zuzi Heicha. So apparently he went to her grave, and he said to her, where is the money? So where's the money? Amar le, Zil Shaklinhu Mituse Bitsinura Didasha, Biduch Plon. So she told him, it's by the doorpost, underneath the pivot of the door. Ve'ema la le'ima, and tell my mother, Tishadar li masrakoi v'govsoi de kuchla, Bahadi planisa da'asya le'machar. Actually very sad. And this girl said, and tell my mother to send me my comb and my eye makeup with that girl who's coming here tomorrow. So what that means is sending my comb and sending my eye makeup, the Gemara understands, is a reference to the fact that this girl died very young. But that's not what we're focusing on. What we're focusing on is what? That she knew who was coming to join them tomorrow. So the Gemara says, Alma Yodi. Therefore we see from here that what? That the dead are in fact aware of what happens in this world. So the Gemara says, not necessarily. Dilma Duma Kadim Umachriz Lahu. Maybe Duma is apparently one of the angels that's in charge of the dead. Maybe Duma came along and what? And announced that the neshama of so-and-so will be joining the world of the dead, the world of neshamos, tomorrow. All right, Tabasi, we'll have to stop over here.